Peace, friends. My name is Erin, and I'm a volunteer on the teaching team. I am as tired as you are from staying up last night. By the way, at school where I work, we do this thing called Quiet Celebration. It goes like this. Let's give it a try. Quiet Celebration. None of us had to watch Duke last night, right? Woo! That's what happens when Tom gives me the microphone. Haha, it's on now. Just kidding. Okay, I am closing out our series called Simon Peter, where we're talking about this guy who usually acts before he thinks. Maybe he is a little bit like us in some ways, and that he's flawed. But I want to take a look at his entire arc here. Okay, so what had started out as this super flawed character, fisherman, and today he's now known as the guy that Jesus said was the rock upon which his church was built. Just for clarification, this is not the rock we're talking about, okay? Wouldn't that mess with your theology a little bit? If he looked like that? No, sadly, he looks like this. Actually, he was probably a little less white than that. But I love his, oh my gosh, I can't believe she just made that joke. Face. So he was perfect for today. Hello, Paul. Good to see you here. Or Peter. Okay. Peter, my friend, had courage, but that courage was fueled by love. We've got the whole book of the Bible now, so we can read ahead after the Gospels and read into the Acts of the Apostles and see all the cool stuff Peter does. Like he's preaching. He's out there, like, traveling the world. He's healing people miraculously. But he started out as the fisherman who betrayed Jesus on the night Jesus was arrested. How did he make that leap? And then how might we make that leap, too? What would that look like for us to be uncommonly courageous? Peter developed that through his experience. His experience in his life with Jesus, his experience as a disciple, and he also experienced that in a really powerful way by encountering Christ's forgiveness and his love. That transformed him into someone we now consider courageous. I mean, maybe the most courageous thing I've done in the last few years is move from Wisconsin to Michigan. This is one of those things where it's like on paper, not a great idea. We don't know anybody, or we didn't know anybody here in Michigan. It was just this sort of like instirring feeling. And as we felt a little less like our future was there in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and we were going to move, and this is all very exciting. And yet, we sold our house in Wisconsin for a price that still makes me throw up in my mouth when I think about it. Can't handle, okay? Not a great time to move. Also, we had 17 children under the age of 4. I felt like that. Dave, my husband, who is now on a plane out to Vegas, don't we all feel really sorry for him? It's going to be 91 there tomorrow. Poor baby. Anyway, he took this picture. He was there, I promise. This is us as we're standing there counting up the cost of this move, figuratively and literally, the cost of this move, and saying, like, logically, this makes no sense. And there were times when we doubted all throughout that move, saying, like, well, it's probably not too late to call my boss and get my job back. Maybe. We wanted to be braver than we were. We developed courage in that season. This is a time when my friend looked at me and she said, you're on the right track, even if it doesn't feel like it. And damn the torpedoes, all right? Say that in a church, it feels really good. Damn the torpedoes! It feels so good. Thank you, Tom, for endorsing that. Damn the torpedoes, I can say that. It comes from history, everyone. American History 101 or so. Here's the Civil War. There's this battle out in this place on the water. And I'm really good at history, I promise. And then, so the Union, the good guys, they're going up this way, okay? And then the Confederates, the bad guys, they're the ones with the torpedoes and the cannons. So there's this string of Union boats, and the first one goes down. It gets sunk by a torpedo. Now you're in that second boat, okay? And the guys behind you aren't answering their text messages, and you're starting to panic, like, what do we do? Because we can't stop real fast, or we're going to pile up, and we can't like turn around because they're all around us. And so this is when the captain said those most famous words. You can Google this, it's true. Damn the torpedoes, we're going anyway. I have looked around, I know the cost, and we're going forward. And they did, and he lived. So, and then they die. Yeah, very sad, but great catchphrase, isn't it? Damn the torpedoes. And now we find ourselves saying that a lot. I mean, there's something that defies logic and even that like base level fear when you're able to move forward knowing that this probably is really risky. And so know that today when I'm talking about courage, I don't mean the absence of fear. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's doing the right thing despite the fear. That's the type of courage our man Peter developed over his life through that experience and through encountering God's love, Jesus' love and forgiveness. Now, this story, though, doesn't make sense. Today's story doesn't make sense out of the context of the rest of his story, including the one from last week. Uncommon courage doesn't just happen. You don't just say, like, I think I'll follow Jesus, and now I'm brave and I can do anything. Instead, it's something that develops over time. Last week was pretty grim for our friend Peter. Tom preached a message on the night Jesus was arrested. And this is where maybe Peter has, he's out down in the bottom of his pit, right? He said at dinner earlier that night, Jesus is like, hey, tonight's gonna go pretty badly, all right? And all you guys are gonna abandon me. And Peter was like, no, I won't, but except me, I love you more than anything, me, I'm gonna do it. And then Jesus is like, actually, no, you're not, you're gonna betray me. And he's like, no, not me, come on, I love you, I got your name tattooed right here, come on, I'm in, I will never betray you. And then Jesus is like, yeah, before the rooster crows, it's gonna happen tonight. And here's where we start to say like, oh, wasn't Peter a wimp? He was such a coward, except where were the other disciples that night, right? Come on, he's not so cowardly to follow him into this dangerous place. So Jesus is being interrogated over here. Somebody comes up to Peter, and she's like, hey, aren't you with that guy? And he's like, nope, never heard of him. And so somebody comes over again and says, no, really, like, you even talk like him. And he's like, no, this is just my British accent. It's nothing. He denies him again. And then a third time, someone comes out and says, for sure, like, quit playing. You know this guy. You're with this guy. And nope, not my circus, not my monkeys, not my problem. And then, wake up, everyone. And then Peter hears this, and he has that moment. Ugh. I just did the thing I said I wasn't going to do. I just let down my friend. And this is serious. Where does he go from there? He's having this breakdown. He's weeping. He leaves, he goes to a place that's now, we call this the upper room, where his friends and followers of Jesus all are, and they're hiding. And they're terrified. Because clearly, whatever happened to Jesus is gonna happen to them. Like, the Jews are coming for them, they're next. And I would be terrified. But yet, there's also this sense that even in coming to his friends, Peter shows some courage there. So when he's there in the upper room with all of his friends, these are the people who are also following Jesus. These are the people who maybe feel a little bit let down by Jesus. This is a little bit like showing up to the people after you make some big mistake. I'd rather hide, actually. I struggle with this. On some small, superficial level, it goes like this. I'm on this soccer team, and Eric is on this too. He's a very amazing player. I, however, this is a video footage of me from the game on Friday.
Get closer to the ball.
You're going to get it. I'm really going to get it. There I am. Oh, no. Shoot. I touched it that time. And I'll come off the field after embarrassing myself, and Eric will be like, hey, it's better than last week. He's so nice. And after I make a fool of myself, the last thing I'm going to do is show up on the bench and be like, make me team captain. I can do this. Make me team captain. Heck no. Usually, actually what I said this past Friday when I left the field was like, blot my name from the history books. I shall go away and you'll never see me again. I don't like to show up to people who I've just let down. And that's just soccer. Uncommon courage shows up, though, when it would be easier to disappear. Let's give Peter some props for that. He shows back up in that room. And maybe, like, this is reminding me of that time when Jesus is like, you can't go where I'm going. And Peter's like, wait, where am I going to go? Because I've left everything to follow you. Everything. I have nowhere else to go. In a sense, Peter's already super courageous in that he's left behind the boat, the fishing boat. He's left behind his hometown. He's here with Jesus. He's in the room now. He's already committed, and he's back. Then comes Sunday morning. And we like this story. In a few weeks, we'll celebrate the Easter story. It'll be great, fantastic. But that, sit in that moment for a second of that Friday night and then that Saturday, and things look pretty grim. And then Sunday morning comes. And Mary Magdalene, who was not a prostitute, by the way, that's a lie made up by some pope a long time ago. I just want to clear that for all women everywhere. She shows up at the tomb first. And she recognizes it's open. She runs all the way back to grab John and to grab Peter. And she's like, you guys got to come see this. And so they're running back. And because this is John's book in the Bible, like John's like, I got there first. Not a race, but I got there first. John gets there first. He shows up there and he peeks inside and he's like, he's gone. And then Peter, who's always just like Peter, he's like, I'm going in. He runs, charges straight in there, and he sees like the burial ground cloths are just laying there on the ground. And that's when he starts to realize like something's happening. And they leave, John and Peter do. They go back to the upper room. And we know that Mary stayed. Yeah, she did. And she's weeping, and they have that beautiful moment where she doesn't recognize the risen Jesus until he says her name. They say, hey, Mary. And then suddenly, we have her Easter story. He told a woman first. Right, yo? Okay. So they're back in the room, though. The room is locked. Remember, they're terrified. Windows are shut. And then all of a sudden, here comes Jesus. Jesus' resurrected body, like, he's there, he's in the room, and it was locked, and this has never happened before. It's probably not going to happen in my lifetime again. This is weird. This is new, right? And if I'm Peter, and I've just let my friend down, which then led to his death, which then led to him being buried and then disappearing from this tomb, like, I got a lot of feels going on right now. All right, I wrote to Dear Abby about this, what the etiquette is. Haven't heard back. She's flabbergasted. So in that moment there in the upper room, though, Jesus, you know, he doesn't storm in, and he's not like, Peter, where were you that night? Come on. Instead, he says, peace be with you. Peace be with you. And that's a sort of standard greeting at the time, peace be with you. But it's also more than just, I hope bad things don't happen to you. That's not what we mean when we say peace. even when Pastor Tom and I, when we start preaching and we say, peace, friends, it's really more like, may God give you every good thing. May God give you every good thing. In other words, Jesus is saying, I ain't mad at you. I'm not. Peace be with you. And imagine then, you're feeling the feelings, right? You're Peter, you've had a crazy weekend, and peace be with you? That sort of radical forgiveness must have blown his mind. Imagine that relief, and imagine how much easier it is to say, damn the torpedoes, when you know that you've got that kind of forgiveness and love. When you're in that room surrounded by people who also have felt and experienced that love. Damn the torpedoes is something you can only say out of a place of love. And not just that. Jesus leaves them with a gift too. With that, he breathed on them and he said, receive the Holy Spirit. And this reminds me of Genesis way back in the beginning when it's like it's God's actual breath, life-giving breath that makes us human and alive. And it's the same here. Now, instead of, you know, God the Creator and Jesus the Redeemer, we've got Holy Spirit here. He's the one who's going to propel us onward from here. He's the sustainer. He's the advocate. So not only peace be with you, but here, now for you, I'm giving you the Holy Spirit. It's easier to say damn the torpedoes when you know Jesus is with you. Now at this point, this is basically where John ends his gospel. It's like, mic drop, hashtag, book of John over, last page, except it's not. Have you ever been to the movies and you like enjoy the show, get up, credits are rolling, you're walking down, and then all of a sudden there's like, the director's like, wait, one more thing. And then you're doing that thing like, oh, should we sit down? Should we sit down? How long is this gonna last? That's how John's like. He's like, I got one more thing to tell you though. My story's not quite done. This is like an addendum onto my gospel, my story about Jesus. And in that, he wraps this up. So Jesus did all these other stuff with the disciples. I couldn't even write them all down. I'm telling you this just so you would come to believe. And now, Simon, who's been having a tough time lately, tells his friends, I'm going to go fishing. Now, he's a fisherman. Like, this is what he does. It's nice to go back to that familiar thing when your life feels like chaos. And I'm going to go fishing, and his friends say, we're going to go there right with you. And here you'll see a strategically placed net. It gets thrown because, dear Peter, in some translations in the Bible it says he's naked, but I guess he's wearing a loincloth in other translations. Pick your favorite. Here he is in the boat fishing. And they fish all night and catch nothing. Sound familiar? And then somebody's standing on shore, and he's like, hey, throw it out on the other side of the boat. Sound familiar? And then they catch fish. Sound familiar? And then our friend Peter, or our friend John, goes, hey, look, that's the Lord. That's who's pointing at us. And Peter, who still has zero chill, goes and grabs his robe, jumps into the water. He's like sprinting toward the beach because this is the guy who, like, even though you betrayed him, he's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm not mad at you. That kind of love would propel me up that beach toward Jesus. And when he's there, they're having breakfast. Like, all the others come in. They're like, we'll get it, Peter. Fine. We've got the fish. It was your idea, but we'll do the work. And here we are having breakfast with Jesus. And what I love is that the Bible doesn't tell us what they talked about over that meal. It's just, the Bible just says all of them knew better than to ask, are you really Jesus? Because they were a little bit afraid to. but I think they knew. So eventually, Peter gets up and he goes on a walk with Jesus. And as he's walking, that those three denials that happened on the night of Jesus' arrest, he sort of gets like a redo from Jesus. Here are three times for you to clear your good name, my friend. Not that he has to, but not that Jesus needs that, but Peter probably does. And Jesus asks him, Simon, son of John, that name Simon, that was your name back when I found you in the boat way long ago, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Because that's what he said the night that Jesus was arrested. Do you love me? Or he said, I love you more than anybody. I love you more than this guy and this guy. I love you. And now he has to answer more humbly. Yeah, Lord, you know I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. And then a second time, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And then one more time, take care of my sheep. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And at this point, Peter's hurt. Jesus had to ask him three times, Jesus, you already know. You know. And yet Jesus asks, do you love me? He said, of course. You know I love you. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. Three times, Peter is told, feed my sheep. Peter's probably pretty clear that Jesus didn't mean, I've got this flock of sheep over here, and I'm going to need you to take care of them. This is not like, if you love me, you'll take out the garbage. This is like, I've got a job for you. This is being commissioned. This is me telling you that you have a job that I've prepared for you. Feed my sheep. Because saying you love Jesus isn't as meaningful as living as if you love Jesus. He's saying your life is going to look different now. If you really love me, you're going to feed my sheep. You're going to do the work that I prepared for you, because that will be that outflowing of love that you feel for me. And Jesus is the good shepherd. As he said earlier in the book of John, the good shepherd, he lays down his life for the sheep. Guess what, Peter? This isn't going to be easy, and it's not going to be fun, and I'm going to give it away here. You're going to die, and it's not going to be the kind of death you would prefer. Tradition tells us he was crucified upside down. Feed my sheep. And because Peter's experienced Jesus, he's watched Jesus heal people. He's traveled with Jesus. He has heard Jesus talk about what it means to feed his sheep. That means caring for other people. It means being with people that other people are like, trying to avoid. That's what feeding my sheep means. To love Jesus is to shape one's life to his life. If we're going to feed sheep, we're going to do as Jesus did. So that question and then the answer and then the commission is for us, these are that our words of love have to be marked by a life of love. Words of love have to be marked by a life of love. So Peter's courage will be obvious whenever he's doing that. He will be proving his love for Jesus when he's doing that work. And he does. He goes on, he builds the church. Like, not literally. He's traveling and he's preaching and he's making disciples for Jesus. but your love for Jesus will become obvious by the way you live your life. So this fisherman realizes that his entire life trajectory is going to change from when he was that guy on the boat. The way that you and I do this, the way we feed sheep, is going to look differently. Now, like, you might be called to do what Peter did. Peter himself was a little bit like, what's that guy's job? Pointing back at John, like, what's his job? If that's my job, that sounds hard. What's his? And Jesus is basically like, okay, you worry about you. I'll worry about him, because he was the perfect parent here. Your job is your job. This is the good work I've prepared for you. It doesn't matter what his job is. And that means that not all of us will be pastors. Quiet celebration, right? This means not all of us will be missionaries in some far-off land. Not all of us will, you know, do these really heroic things. But we know that because the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, this is probably going to require some courage on our part. The commandment that Jesus left is that you're going to love one another the way I loved you. You're going to put your life on the line for your friends. Love one another how I loved all you guys. You saw me do it. Now go and do it too. And guess what? Damn the torpedoes, because it's going to get messy. Okay? People aren't going to understand when you start making life changes, when you start spending your money or your time differently. They're going to think you're weird. Damn the torpedoes. People aren't going to understand. For some people, that's going to lead to, like, torture and death. Damn the torpedoes. You've counted the cost, but the outpouring of love is still there, and you just can't help but be that courageous. Damn the torpedoes. You've counted the cost and do it anyway. And for us, what does that look like? What does damn the torpedoes look like in our life? I mean, in the way that we spend our time, and the way that we spend money, and the way we post or don't post things on Facebook, or the things that we say to each other in person, the way we greet our neighbors, the real actual ones. How might it change what you do? And what if we were this place that was known for doing that, just being that sort of courageous? And as I pray here, I want you to remember that your fear is just your humanity. Your courage is a sign of God's Spirit in you. And they can coexist. It's human to be afraid, but we have God's Spirit inside of us. And Jesus, thank you for that gift. Thank you that you gave us these examples of flawed creatures so that we would recognize ourselves in them. And thank you that you gave us Jesus, who gave us the perfect example. And all who agreed said, Amen.